We'll call the Commerce Committee meeting to order, March 4th, 2004, 12:30 p.m. We do not have a quorum yet. As soon as we do, we will officially call the meeting to order and take care of a few items of business. Is that to this bill, first one? Okay, first of all, we have Representative Ulsterman here today to present House File 2386. There's an amendment coming around that we didn't get in your packet.
Yeah.
And then there'll be an oral amendment, but let's, we can't really act on those until we have a quorum. So, but we will start with the testimony. Welcome to your committee, Representative, and if you could present your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I thought only the Regulated Industries Committee was on a diet. Obviously, this committee is on a big diet, too. Hopefully, other people will be joining us at some point. That would be a good thing. I'm going to have join me at the table this afternoon the commissioner of the newly merged, or in the process of merging, Department of Employment and Economic Development. That's Commissioner Matt Kramer. So, Matt, you want to come up here?
Do we have a
Commissioner Kramer is joining me. What we thought we would do, members, is just give you a brief overview of what this bill does. You've got it. It's quite a thick document. And so before we proceed with the overview of the bill, I'm going to have Commissioner Kramer just walk you through really what's been going on with the merger to date and allow you to answer or ask him any questions that you might have. So with that, Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you, Representative. And before we go on, is there anyone in this? I want to make a couple announcements here first. Well, I'll wait till we get some more folks.
All right.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify in opposition to House File 2386 or its two amendments? Now, in this committee, Commissioner, that means it's the real short version.
Mr. Chair,
no opposition the way it looks here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I will be mercifully brief. I wanted to give you, as Representative Ulsterman noted, just a brief update as to the new agency. On July 1st of last year, at your direction, we merged the Department of Trade and Economic Development and the Department of Economic Security into the newly formed Department of Employment and Economic Development. Our mission was adjusted by talking to our employees and thinking about the fact that despite the fact that the agencies had very different approaches, the result was exactly the same. One focused on individuals, the other focused on business and communities, but the reality is both of them drove economic success at the end of the day. So we've adjusted our mission statement to reflect that. What I'd like to do is give you a brief overview of who our customers are. We break down our customers into four categories. Individuals, and I'm not going to go through these, and I think everyone has a copy in their package, so you're free to look through this, but individuals across the state of Minnesota, businesses, those starting in Minnesota, those relocating, those growing and expanding, those that seek new services, communities across the state, whether in the metropolitan area or in greater Minnesota, communities that are building out their infrastructure, that have been impacted by layoffs, they're dealing with contaminated sites, they're dealing with tourism, and then finally partners across state government, MinSCU, the University of Minnesota, the private colleges across the state, agencies that we work with, whether they be nonprofit or otherwise, for whom we have pass-through dollars, a whole host of federal agencies that we work with, and then, of course, other state agencies. Within this, we have developed an organization, then, that tries to break those four customer sets down into an organizational structure that's very responsive to that. And again, you have a copy of this, so I won't go into it in detail. But suffice to say that what we've tried to do is put all of our back-office infrastructure functions in one area and put everything else very customer-facing, very customer front-forward, very much like a business organization. Our agency spans the state. Many times we think of ourselves as being located here in downtown St. Paul, but we have workforce centers around the state. We have tourist information offices. We have small business development centers. We even have various business development regional offices, and we've got three of those around the state with some of our staff. Our workforce centers are becoming and will become one of the cornerstones of this agency in the sense that they are regional outposts for economic development, and we hope to build on that and improve their ability to talk to both businesses and communities beyond the individuals they've been focusing on today. We've been really working since the merger on three things, and I really should say four. The fourth one is internal to the agency, making sure that this merger is very much a success. And from that perspective, having gone through a number of corporate mergers myself, I can absolutely, without question, say that the merger has been a success internal to the agency. External to the agency, we're leveraging three things. We're very much focusing on how workforce and economic development link together. 2 weeks ago, I was in Chicago at a Department of Labor meeting where they were speaking to the workforce development commissioners from around the country. I was one of only two commissioners in the audience that also had the title economic development. Missouri happens to be the only other state that has done what Minnesota has. It was very remarkable because they were encouraging every workforce commissioner across the country to get themselves and their teams much more involved in economic development. At the end of the day, they're one and the same. You can't grow businesses without employees, and you can't grow your employee base without employers. So very much where I think we're ahead of the power curve. Excuse me. We are working to enhance the role, as I said, of the workforce centers. Workforce centers have, to some extent, gotten a little bit of a bad brand image to them. They are a very, very powerful part in our community, and yet, unfortunately, many times they are viewed as the unemployment office. We need to change that. The workforce center is where you go when you want to be successful. It's where you go when you explore career options. It's where you go when you're exploring career ladders. We have so many great services to offer to any category of person walking in the office. We need to project that positive image. And then finally, Mr. Chair and members, as you'll have noted from our lapel pins, from our stationery, from other things you've seen from the agency, we're working very diligently to talk about Positively Minnesota and what it means to articulate a vision for the state that is powerful, that puts all of our assets into very much a forward-looking, very positive outreach to businesses, individuals, and communities, and tell them what the state is all about. In 2004, we have several key legislative initiatives, and some, you're obviously familiar with the merger bill in front of you today. We're also working with the biosciences industry, and some of the members on this committee are involved in that. We have a number of things happening through our Public Facilities Authority as they relate to water infrastructure, drinking water, and wastewater treatment. We will be introducing some reforms to the state's dislocated worker program. You're familiar with another bill involving our tourism office. There's been a little bit of confusion. We are not spinning that office out, but we do recognize that now is the time for Minnesota to explore new alternatives and how tourism fits into overall economic development. And some of you may have already heard briefings from John Edmond, the director of the Minnesota Office of Tourism, on this. I think it's a very powerful way to approach tourism in the state. And then finally, we have one other bill that, leveraging some state dollars, we're actually going to be able to get more federal dollars through a match with the Centers for Independent Living, making up to some extent the cuts that that organization incurred last year. Why did we want to do this to begin with, and why in particular today are we seeking to move offices? And I know that some of you have heard that we're actually going to be moving late this summer, early fall. Our offices today are scattered in four different locations in downtown St. Paul, and as any corporate organization would tell you, there is an advantage in forming a cohesive single organization. As oftentimes happens, much of the most valuable work gets done next to the coffee machine or outside the restroom. I know that's somewhat trivial, but at the same time, it's an important part about building an agency culture. On the good news, bad news, the bad news has been there's a recession. The good news is there's cheap office space available in St. Paul, and we want to stay in St. Paul. We're not moving out of town. We also want to take advantage of the fact that we can get very good office rates in Class B space here in downtown St. Paul. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. We also have one other issue, and for me, from a business continuity standpoint, From a business continuity standpoint, it's actually very important. Business, the building that we're in at 390 North Robert was built in the late 60s, early 70s. As is the case in many buildings built in that area, the steel members were all sprayed with an asbestos fiber for fire containment, as was appropriate at the time. Again, as was oftentimes the case in buildings of that era, the cold air return runs through the spaces between the members that are sprayed with asbestos. We have a situation today that is twofold. One, it is very difficult for us to work on our heating, ventilation, and air conditioning in the building without disturbing the asbestos fibers, and so as a rule of thumb, we simply don't. We regularly blow fuses because people bring in portable heaters in the winter. We have people that come to work literally wearing their winter jacket all day. And the summer, the inverse happens. Were it not for a rather diligent dress code that befits the state employees, we'd be wearing bathing suits. We also have the issue then that, and I again, from a business continuity standpoint, you don't want to picture that.
The chairman in a Speedo, I can see. Okay, with that, we'll officially call a meeting. I'm glad that we weren't in order at that time. We'll officially call a meeting to order. Representative Atkins has read the minutes of March 3rd and moves their approval. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Atkins. Okay, Representative Osterman moves House File 2386 to be recommended pass and sent to the Committee on Government Operations. Representative Osterman, is this your 0999 amendment?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair, and I also have an oral amendment.
Okay, let's do the written one here first. Is that technical, or what does it do? What are we doing here?
With this amendment?
Yeah.
It is technical.
Okay. Let's get in the shape we want, then we can debate it from there. Representative Osterman moves the A04-0999 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Then you have
That amendment, Mr. Chair, lines 7 and 8 need to be deleted. That's a reference on page 39, line 15.
Okay.
That needs to be deleted. There are some ongoing discussions that are probably going to result in somebody bringing us future language, but at this point in time, we need to remove it from this particular amendment.
Okay, Representative Osterman moves we delete on lines 7 and 8 off the amendment that's currently in the bill, been amended in the bill, that we remove lines 7 and 8 and renumber accordingly. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, can we have a summary on this bill? It's pretty extensive.
We don't?
Mr. Chair, Representative Goodwin, no. I ran out of time to do the summary.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill in the shape we'd like. I have a list for questions, Representative Mahoney. But, Mr. Kramer, if you could please finish up here with your comments, and then we'll get to working on the bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Only one last slide. Looking in St. Paul, there was an option, I think, had we explored further, we could have moved further out into the metropolitan area. I think it's important primarily because so many of our employees commute to work using MTC that we didn't want to put our workforce in a position where they were having to build new transportation options. So we chose to stay in downtown St. Paul. We're able to lock in very low rates over a 10-year period, and my deputy, Dennis Yecke, will be available after I speak if anyone has any particular questions on the real estate aspects of this deal. We will be saving the state money in terms of lease appropriations for the next 10 years. Mr. Chair, I believe, and then one last chart that simply shows the comparison between if we stayed in all of our present facilities in the four different locations we have in downtown St. Paul versus moving into one consolidated facility. You'll be familiar, it's the former First National Bank building. It still has the giant red one on the top. I think the building name has actually changed, but I still call it First National. Mr. Chair, that's it for me. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions for the Commissioner or the author of the bill? Representative Goodwin? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Mahoney, then Goodwin. Sorry. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment. I was, I know this is the Commerce Committee and it's Peace in the Valley, but I was catching up on my reading and I seen it must have came across, a report came across my desk a couple weeks ago, and they were talking, you brought up the workforce centers, saying that most of the jobs that are being created lately and for these people coming out of our workforce and our training are at 80% of their past wages. And it's a substantial pay increase if someone's making $30,000 or $50,000. As I say, this is the Commerce Division, so you might want to stop in front of the jobs and answer this one, but maybe you can answer it today. Is there any comment on this 20% wage drop when we are retraining someone for a new job?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, you may be, I'm not familiar with the exact report you're talking about. Are you familiar, is this the Dislocated Worker Program report, or report that we produced recently?
Representative Mahoney?
You know, I don't remember the exact title. I have enough trouble just trying to remember all the text, much less the titles of all the reports. But
okay.
More or less what it said is that, you know, the last 3 years, the state's lost 65,000 jobs. And the people that have gone back to work, they're going back to work at approximately 20% of 80% of their wages that they had. You know, is there any reason that we're not getting the people back up to 100%, or do we need to spend? As I said, this is a Commerce Division, but I haven't seen you for a week or two. And
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll certainly comment in part on that. If you're referring to the Dislocated Worker Bill, that is individuals who were working for a company, were laid off, register through the Dislocated Worker Program, get retraining paid for by the employers of the state of Minnesota through the Dislocated Worker Fund, historically they have returned, historically they returned somewhere between 70 to 90% of the original wage rate. And there's a number of systemic reasons why that would be the case. For example, a longtime tenured union employee laid off from a company may have been at a very good solid wage rate, but in retraining, even if they go back into union employment, they're going to enter at a lower scale than they were at the beginning because they're in a new field. They're starting more towards the bottom. So in general, people who go through the dislocated worker program enter back into the labor force at a wage not equal 100% to their wage rate at the beginning. There obviously is a tie there to the economy in general. That is, the more jobs that are being created, the better opportunity for those individuals to find a job that is closer to wage parity. The situation we've been in the last couple of years with the recession, I think 80% is remarkably good.
Representative Maloney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only concern is for those people making $50,000 to $40,000, and that $8,000 to $10,000 drop in pay means that they might have to do something with their house or their car or all their toys, or might get some of the equity stripped out of their house or something like that. So, just wondering if you wanted to comment, and you didn't. So I'll probably catch up with you or one of your employees before the day is over, and they'll give me more of an earful.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions here. I understand you're moving your facilities from three different places. Is that correct? Into one?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. We're in three different buildings, four different locations in downtown St. Paul. One building, we have offices on both the fifth floor and the first floor. We wish to consolidate it into one facility, the First National Bank building.
Okay.
Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I see in the bill that you're asking for $16,667 a month or up to $200,000 a year for this facility, for this merge?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, could I do this? In terms of the details on this, my deputy, Dennis Yackey, has acted as our point person in the real estate transaction. And in fairness, I would be very honest, he knows more about this than I do. So
please come to the table, identify yourself.
Dennis Yackey, the deputy at DC.
Okay.
Chairman, Representative Goodwin, the reference to the $16,667 in the bill, it deals with the lease, current World Trade Center where the trade office is located. We currently pay about $340,000 a year for lease payments there. We desire to relocate the trade office with the rest of the department. The lease on that building that we have goes through August of 07. And the Department of Administration feels that in order for us to break that lease, there needs to be specific language in the lease, in the Appropriation Act, that limits the amount that the department can spend for rental property at that location. So that brings it down to approximately the level that we would be paying in the First National Bank building.
Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Yackey, I'm still not understanding how much you are paying now for the facilities that you're in compared to what you'll be paying when you merge them, and how much it's going to cost you to do that. That's what I'm really looking for.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then while he's looking for that, maybe I can ask the commissioner, what's going on with the dislocated worker program? Did you assign a contract with the Employers Association for those services, for some of those services?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Employers Association now is a qualified service provider. I don't believe they've bid on any work as of date, but they did go through the certification process along with a number of other providers. We actually asked everyone, all of our providers, to go through the same process, and so they're now a qualified provider.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, who else is a qualified provider besides the Employers Association that you've added?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure. Dennis, you know, I don't think, did we, who did, we added two of them, didn't we?
I don't recall what the second one was.
If you're talking, Representative, in terms of other providers, obviously people like the Teamster Service Bureau, Quality Career Services, which is the former AFL-CIO, Hired, we've got a Jewish vocational services. I believe we added two, and I apologize for the life of me. I can't recall the two that we added.
Okay, and Mr. Chair and Commissioner, you're satisfied that the Employers Association, after the FBI raided their offices and took some of their files, that since then that they have no further problems, or where's that stand? Did you check all that out before you made them another qualified service provider? Because there was significant controversy about their work formerly on the dislocated worker program.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Employers Association went through the same qualification process that the Teamsters, the Quality Career Services, and all of our service providers went through. We had our staff look at every application and make a determination as to who is qualified to serve the employees in the state of Minnesota, and they met that qualification.
Mr. Tom Goodwin.
Okay. I guess I'd be interested in seeing who else applied for that and who else you do have as a qualified service provider.
Commissioner, could you get that for the representative?
Yes, absolutely, Mr. Chair. We get that list is actually, I believe, it's on our website, so we'll simply have somebody print that out and bring it over.
Okay.
Thank you. One final question, Mr. Chair. There's, besides the merging in this bill, it looks like there are some fairly significant changes to your mission spelled out in the language. For example, one of the provisions requires in current law for you to have one deputy commissioner that's experienced and knowledgeable in matters of international trade, and I noticed that you're eliminating that. Why would you want to eliminate that?
Commissioner?
Chair, Representative, for the reasons of productivity, quite honestly, because what we have done is we look at ourselves as an organization that's committed to customer service. We have an entire department that is focused on international trade that specifically hires people who have international trade expertise. It is not necessary. In fact, today, actually ended up eliminating one position. The director of the Minnesota Trade Office is uniquely experienced in international trade. He's simply not a deputy. He's just a director.
Representative Goodwin.
Okay, and just a couple more. Did you find my answers on the cost?
Mr. Yeager.
Sure. Goodwin, the last page of the chart that the commissioner was working off of shows the annual lease cost comparison. Right now we're spending a little over $2.3 million for lease and operating costs at the 39 building. That will be dropping to just shy of $2 million a year in the first year.
And what's the moving cost? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
Representative Goodwin. The moving cost, we estimate just about $2.5 million will be the one-time moving cost.
Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And where are you going to get that from?
Mr. Yackey.
Representative Goodwin, that is coming from the operating budgets of all of our divisions. It's being prorated based on square footage and a few other cost factors, but it's spread across all of our divisions, and I should say that it's coming from existing resources. We're not asking the legislature for any additional funds for this move or for the relocation.
Representative Goodwin.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I do have a lot of questions about this. So it's coming out of your operating funds from your different departments during a time when we're trying to get people back to work. That is of concern to me that you're doing that. And how many layoffs do you expect that to create, a $2 million reduction in your operating budgets?
Mr. Yackey, or Commissioner?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, as you may be aware, the legislature specifically prohibited layoffs associated with this merger until June of 2005. So as when the merger happened, from July 1st of last year, we have not laid off anyone associated with merger-related activities.
Well, then, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, where do you find $2 million in your operating budgets? And if there's $2 million for a move in your operating budgets, you're either asking for too much money when you come here in the first place, or you're finding it in thin air. I don't know, but where do you find $2 million in an operating budget that you didn't plan for?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, first of all, we did plan for this, and second, where do we find the money? As our agency is probably, and Dennis, correct me, I suspect we're almost 80% federally funded. Programs like unemployment insurance or other programs that are on the federal side, we are taking some of our administrative dollars that we are allocated from the federal government to do this. When spread across almost a 2,000-person agency, yes, it is a big sum, but it also returns untold dividends to the state by locating our facility in one cohesive unit, allowing our employees to interact with each other in a way that the legislature intended through this merger.
Representative Goodwin.
Well, one other final comment then is that I have heard considerable morale issues in your department, and I hadn't heard those before about trade or economic security, trade and economic development or the economic security. But in the last year, I've heard from a number of employees that are I haven't heard complaints about you, Commissioner, but I have heard complaints about the Deputy Commissioner and the treatment of employees, and I'm just hoping that during this merger that you're not going to end up with a lot of bad morale there when we need people to be at their best so they can help Minnesotans find jobs. So I would just, I want to relay that to you because it does concern me, the kind of morale issues that I'm hearing about.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. With that, Representative Osterman renews her motion that House File 2386, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on GovOps. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative and Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner. Okay, with that, we will go to House File 2439. Representative Broad has that, and I believe she has another commitment. We'll go as far as we can, and then somebody else will take over for you when you have to take off. I'm going to append her. Representative Broad moves House File 2439. I will first deal with and be recommended pass and sent to the Committee on Civil Law. Are there any amendments that are from you, Representative Broad, that you want on to get it in the shape you'd like?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I do have the H2439A1 amendment.
Okay. And let's get it in the shape the author like, then we can look at it from there. She moves, Representative Broad moves the H2439A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Any other author amendments?
Not at this time, no.
Okay. Now, this has several different parts to it here, and we've asked Mr. Pender to determine which sections we should be looking at, so I don't want to get in all the civil law things. We'll let them do their job on that. Mr. Pender, what's that? But which section should we, you might want to just note on the bill which sections we should be asking questions about or referring to.
Mr. Chair, my recommendations were that our committee's jurisdiction is all of Article 2 and sections 1 to 5 of Article 1, and that the rest of Article 1 is more hardcore real estate law and would be appropriate for civil law committee.
Okay, so members, if you could take note of that, and any questions we have should be to the appropriate items before the committee here and not all the civil law stuff. Okay, with that, Representative Broad, if you could present your bill. Is there anyone in the audience in the sections that we're looking at that has opposition to the bill? If they're in other sections that are going to be civil law, this is going to civil law next. You can save arguments for this. So there's no opposition to this bill on the points that we're looking at that I see at this point. Representative Broad, please explain your bill or introduce your witnesses, however you'd like to handle it here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have to note that this bill is neither simple nor as dry as the bill that Representative Pugh carried a few weeks ago. Very exciting bill, of course. This bill does deal with real estate regulation and laws here in Minnesota. The parts that we're going to be taking care of here today will deal with some mortgage originator and service licensing information, seller disclosure modifications, and then some articles in 82 that will put some things that are occurring in rule actually into statute. And I do have with me here today a couple folks from the Minnesota Association of Realtors to talk about the technical and specific portions of the bill. Susan Diori is here.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Susan Diori, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. And with me today is Don Smith, our legal counsel from Thompson and Nybeck. First, Mr. Chair and members, I just wanted to, first of all, thank Paul Marinek and Tom Pender and the staff in the advisor's office. This was a very large and complicated bill, and we gave it to them in December, and we appreciate all the work that they've done on it. And we also want to apologize to those of you we did not get a chance to speak to prior to the hearing. It is our usual practice to speak to each and every one of you, but we unfortunately had a sudden and tragic death of a colleague in our office, so we had a delay in our schedule, so we apologize for that. And I will stick strictly, with that said, I'll just get right into the details of the bill and go through them generally and take any questions and defer any legal issues to our legal counsel, Don Smith. And I'll stick strictly to the issues that that Tom said were relevant here. To start with the mortgage originator statute, in Section 1 of the bill, it does essentially a couple things. Number one, it states that mortgage originators are required to follow the table funding requirements under current Minnesota statutes 82.176, which is essentially saying that mortgage lenders are required to make sure that certified funds are to the closer on or before the date of closing. It does establish penalties for violation of or delay in a closing, for unreasonable delay in closing. Some concerns were raised to us by the mortgage bankers. They indicated there would be a better place to put that language, and we're more than willing to work with them if the bill moves through the process to get that issue straightened out. And then it also makes some technical provisional changes in Sections 3 and 4. On the seller disclosure statute, recall a couple years ago the legislature passed a law which requires sellers to disclose material facts relating to the physical condition of a property, so if there's a wet basement, leaky roof, et cetera. This would expand that current law to require sellers to disclose all material facts of which they're aware. I guess one example of a difference would be something beyond the physical condition would be, for example, an expansion of an airport runway or perhaps the freeway is going to be expanded into their backyard. That's something material that we think that a seller would probably know much more than a real estate licensee would know and should be required to disclose. As far as Chapter 82 is concerned, the reason why that is so big is mainly, as Representative Broad mentioned, what we're trying to do is take rules, two chapters of rules, 2800 and 2805, which is the real estate licensing regulations, and put them into Chapter 82 and then index the chapter, and that's mainly why it is so big. We do have a couple of provisional changes in Chapter 82. We're having some technical changes on the dual agency language. We're modifying the material fact disclosure language pertaining to real estate licensees. Changing the terms rights and interests to use and enjoyment in order to be consistent with what is required under the agency relationships form under the common law duty. We're also adding language, common law language, to the statute, trying to, and I'll actually defer to Don on that particular issue to explain, if you would, real quick, Don.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Don Smith, I'm General Counsel of the Minnesota Association of Realtors. Basically, the language is the limitation on disclosures you set forth in the statute shall modify any common law duties with respect to disclosure of material facts. What we're trying to do is bring clarity to this area rather than having two sets of laws that are crisscrossing each other and creating confusion. We've got the common law disclosure obligations, now we've got a statutory set of exceptions, and we want to make sure that the language of the statute dictates the law rather than some undetermined floating law out there, common law. So that's the purpose behind abrogating or modifying common law with respect to the specific statutory. Okay.
And just a few other provisions. We're also modifying some language just to clarify that compensation can be paid by a broker to other parties in the transaction, including other brokers, and that they can compensate a limited liability company, really just clarifying issues. We're also deleting some outdated language pertaining to disclosures of agency relationships, since we have a new form that requires agency disclosure. We're also adding some language that would allow, that would clarify that the Commerce Department could accept transfers of real estate licenses electronically. And we are also modifying some continuing education provisions, which would eliminate the limitation on how many hours of continuing ed a real estate licensee can take, either through their broker or online. Right now it's limited to 7.5 hours per year. And it would also modify the current restrictions on what courses can be approved for continuing education by the Commerce Department, such as technology and negotiation. Those things cannot be approved for continuing ed. We'd like to see those passed. And we also are modifying a rule in statute after it's, and that's under 2809, which isn't the ones we were incorporating, but it would essentially state that a licensee could take the same number course for a licensing period rather than a three-year period, which is in rule, and that would pertain strictly to real estate licensees. And that's pretty much the major provisional changes in Chapter 82.
Okay. Okay. Any questions for the author or the witnesses? Representative Mullery?
Mr. Chairman, I didn't catch your name.
My name.
Right.
Don Smith.
Did either Dave Ide or Walt Graff approve of this language regarding MCIOWA provisions and disclosures?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, we forwarded the language to David Ide. We have not heard back from him. We have heard from the real estate section of the bar, and we will be meeting with them the beginning of next week. So we have not heard any feedback regarding that.
Representative Mullery?
Well, my understanding is that they were notified about regarding section apparently 12, the purchase agreement cancellations, and I know they're, from what I've heard from them, they're quite opposed. There's a six-page memo that I gave to the page to give out that I was just sent this morning. I thought that was only one person then contacted, and you haven't heard back from him among
Mr. Smith
with regard to this, the MCIOWA provisions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, I faxed a copy of the MCIOWA provisions to David Ide, and I have not heard back from David Ide.
Now, members, the provisions that Representative Mullery is talking about is not under the jurisdiction of Commerce. It's more civil. Are you on civil law?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mullery.
First of all, I know I would lose it, but I would challenge that ruling because it's clearly within Commerce, the Section 12, but you said that Section 5 was within this division, and that's what I'm talking about right now.
Well, Mr. Pender said that, and if that's what you're on, that's cool.
Be careful how you treat Mr. Pender.
With all respect. Go ahead. If it's in 5, we're fine.
Mr. Chair, we believe it's in Sections 6 through 10, the MCIOWA provisions.
Representative Mullery?
What is that?
MCIOWA. Is that, what is that?
Minnesota Common
Interest.
Common Interest Ownership Act.
Oh, that's what I thought it was, yeah.
It has no relation to Iowa.
I thought, Southern Iowa, I don't know.
Chair, is there a correlation between real estate attorneys and actuaries?
For the actuary's sake. Representative Mullery, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Nothing.
I do think, Representative Broad, that there is some potential controversy on some of the things that we're not going to talk about today, and that'll be handled in civil law. And you might want to talk to Representative Mullery and, you know, because if he's dogging you the whole way, it's just not going to be good.
We would be happy to do so.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you want to see what his thoughts and concerns are on that. Representative Mullery? Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Brunt. I had a constituent that really ran into a tremendous amount of trouble with a delayed closing, and I kind of heard Representative Mullery was bugging me, so I didn't quite hear all of it. So if you could go over the provisions of the bill and where it is in the bill that you referred to as to how you were dealing with some of the closing being delayed, and what the penalty is, and what triggers the penalty.
Representative Broad or Mr. Giorgio?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the provision that we're putting in place is in regards to mortgage originators, and it's going to be the same provision that's currently in statute in regards to mortgage lenders, which would be under let's see here, 47.206, I believe. And essentially, the penalties that are put in place are there A, B, C, and D, and I'd be happy to provide it to you.
Scott, is that section 3 we're talking about here?
Let's see. It's, yes.
I'm sorry.
Article 1, pardon me.
Article 1, Section 1?
Section 1.
Section 1.
Article 1, Section 1,
okay.
58.18. So it essentially lines up the mortgage originators with the lenders in terms of that statute, as I said, of 47.206, which talks about unreasonable delays. And maybe Mr. Smith can talk about the legal ramifications of that.
Mr. Smith?
I'm not going to be able to speak in detail about that particular statute, Mr. Chairman, but I think the whole idea here is some of the abuses with respect to mortgage lenders is that oftentimes they make promises and then don't carry through on them. And this statute is designed to create some sanctions to the extent they don't follow through with their commitments.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you explain the sanctions?
Mr. Okay.
I want to be able to call my constituents and say, this is what's going to happen.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I do have the lender sanctions.
Can you give me the page in line that you're talking about here?
Certainly. It's actually in a different part of the statute, but it's 47.206. It's relating the penalties to somewhere else in statute. It's actually not within this bill. It's a different statute reference. It's referring to a different statute.
Oh, okay.
So the penalties are essentially this. Let's see. Do you have the statute book?
Mm-hmm.
Page 54. I can read it for you. A lender who violates this section or who causes unreasonable delay in processing a loan application beyond the expiration date of the agreement is liable to the borrower for a penalty in an amount not to exceed the borrower's actual out-of-pocket damages, including a present value of... blah, blah, blah. So if we go on further in the statute, and a lender is liable to the borrower for $500 for each violation of the section for unreasonable delay. A lender who violates subdivision 4 is liable to the borrower for specific performance of an agreement in the amount of $500. And it kind of goes on in that line. So essentially all we're doing is linking mortgage originators to that lending statute.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for explaining that to me. My problem here is that unfortunately my constituent probably out a whole lot more because the interest rate changed on her and a variety of other things. And again, it comes back to one of the things that we've done in other bills. She's got to pay the attorney fees. So, I will... I'm sure I actually did talk to her about some of this, the penalty here. It's too bad we can't really figure out some way that it makes it easier for them to get the out-of-pocket damages. And I won't try to do that here. This is not the place, although I know everything is germane and my favorite committee chair's committee. But we'll just leave it at that. And hopefully the real estate people will start to understand that they might want to bring that forward. Otherwise, somebody might have to do it for him.
Representative Ross?
Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to talk with you further, Representative Mahoney, on that.
Any other questions for the author or either testifiers? Okay, with that, I will move, or Representative Broad renews her motion that House File 2439, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to Committee on Civil Law. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Broad. Okay, item next. Stang, House Representative Stang, House File 2216, Industrial Loan and Thrift Companies. Let's get it in the shape the author would like here first. Representative Stang, how many amendments do you have?
Mr. Chair, just the A2 amendment.
A2? Okay, Representative Stang moves House File 2216 be recommended passed sent to the Committee on Civil, or to send to the General Register. I'm sorry, sent to the General Register. Representative Stang moves H221682 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill in the shape the author would like. Representative Stang, if you could please explain your bill to the committee.
Members, this House File basically a federal conformity. It deals with industrial loan and thrift companies, bringing them into conformity with their ability to accept deposits. I have Joe Witt here from the Minnesota Bankers Association to give you a little more background information on the bill as well.
Thank you, Representative Stang. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify against House File 2216 as amended? Are there any opponents? Thank you. Mr. Witt, if you could give the Reader's Digest version.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Witt. I'm with the Minnesota Bankers Association. This bill, as the author said, is a basically a federal conformity bill and also a bit of a fairness bill. It's designed to ensure that commercial companies cannot get into the business of banking. Federal and state laws prohibit banks from getting into commercial enterprises, and so what this bill basically does is flip-flops that rule and make sure that commercial entities can't get into banking. It is conforming to federal law. As all of you know, when you're a financial institution, you can either choose to be chartered under state or federal law, and the feds have already made this change, so we're just conforming our state ILC laws to that federal law.
Any questions for Mr. Witt or Representative Stang? Seems pretty straightforward on this one. Any questions? Representative Stang renews his motion that House File 2216 as amended be recommended passed and sent to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Stang. Now, that's how we want to see bills go next Tuesday, because what we've done with the our committee administrator and committee legislative assistant, we've gone through and we put a whole bunch of bills and we're going to list them all pretty much for Tuesday, and there's going to be a whole bunch of them for Tuesday and Tuesday night, and then we'll move the ones we don't get over to Wednesday and Thursday. And so for Tuesday, to get these some of these bills moving that have other stops to make, if there's no opposition to them, we're going to have them described thoroughly within 1 minute, and then we're going to move them on. Now, if there's controversy on some of these bills, we're going to slow it down and we're going to set them off, with the exception of the first bill we're going to hear is one we've already heard. It's the ovarian cancer screening bill. That one, if there, we are going to take that one up first. That has some other stops possibly, and we're going to try and get that going if the committee wants to do that. So with that, we should have the next bill being passed out. That was in duplicating. We have it now. So when are we going to post the bills that are going to be heard? Shortly after committee, the bills will be posted so you can see what's up, and there's a lot of them. And like I said, for Tuesday, if they're really quite controversial and going to take a lot of time, we're going to have to move to some that we can get moving. So with that, Representative Coles, welcome to your committee, sir. Representative Coles moves that House File 1798 be recommended, passed, and sent to the Committee on Civil Law. Members, you should have the House research summary, and we have several amendments here. Let's get this bill in the shape the author wants, and then if we don't like someone, we'll take it out. Representative Coles moves House File 1798A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Coles moves the H179883 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Coles, please tell us what we just did.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is the Secretary of State's business services bill. It does five things. It reduces filing fees for filing uniform commercial code financing statements or amendments online from $20 to $15 when that filing is done electronically. It eliminates statewide auctioneer registration with the Office of Secretary of State, leaves it in the county hands. Moves the notary registration function from the office of to the office of the Secretary of State from the Department of Commerce, and eliminates certain bond filings with the Secretary of State's office that are actually required and reviewed first by other state agencies. And finally, it changes business entity annual registration provisions to allow for reinstatement at any time, eliminates certain mailings that the Secretary's office is currently required to do, and provides a uniform rule for administrative dissolution. The first amendment that we put on the bill, Mr. Chair, is an amendment brought forward to me by the co-ops, basically bringing the cooperative associations into conformity with what we're doing with the other business entities. The Secretary's office is fine with it. Mr. Black can expand on that if necessary. The Second Amendment deals with the notary transfer and cleans up some language from the original bill, and Mr. Black can explain that further if members have questions.
Okay, first of all, is there anybody in the audience? I guess no. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to testify against the bill? Okay. So with that, we will open it up for questions. Mr. Black, did you want to comment on the bill, or are you here for questions? Or
recognizing the desire for speed, I'll be glad to take questions, but I won't bore you with any other comments.
Well, you can, if you have some comments prepared that you'd like to make, you can certainly
no,
make them.
No, I'm all set.
I don't know, this is probably not appropriate in committee, but I've always liked your name. You know Baxter Black?
No, I don't.
The large animal veterinarian on public radio?
Well, I'll have to check that out.
And he's a good guy. Yeah.
Thank you,
Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Coles, and this might be for your aunt, the one who wants to take all the questions here. On page 6, line 15, subdivision 5, it says reinstatement. You're talking about a limited liability company is administratively terminated. You're striking here, but the words, but only within 1 year of the date of the termination or revocation. Why are you doing that?
Representative Coles?
Mr. Chair, if I can have assistance from my good friend, Mr. Black, that'd be great.
Thank you. And let me identify myself for the tape. I'm Bert Black. I'm a business and legal analyst with the Secretary of State's office. We're actually doing this, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney, with all of these entities, the limited liability companies, business corporations, nonprofit corporations, and now the co-ops. That was the gist of the amendment that was just put on. And the reason for that is to allow greater flexibility to business entities once they've been administratively dissolved. There currently is a one-year deadline, and so if they miss that, then they cannot reinstate at any time. They must reincorporate, and I can tell you that there are massive tax issues that arise. Generally speaking, what that will do is it will convert them from a limited liability entity, where the shareholders and owners have liability limited only to their investment, to a general partnership as the default mode of doing business in Minnesota and elsewhere in the United States. The general partnership doesn't give you any protection against personal liability for business debts. And, of course, that was the whole point of becoming a corporation or an LLC or a co-op in the first place. So the desire is to give business entities more flexibility to be able to pay the fee, file the deficient registration, and retain their identity as a corporation. Tax impact... there's real estate impact if you have leases or licenses. It could have, or intellectual property that's held in the name of the corporation or LLC. All that would go poof upon the expiration of the one-year reinstatement. It's sort of a springing result of that. And so it's a trap, essentially. And there really isn't any particular need for it at this point. This was part of legislation that was passed a long time ago, and we were clearing out a lot of deadwood. We were first automating back in the late 80s and clearing out a lot of deadwood in our system, but we've done that quite effectively now, and there really isn't any particular specific reason for that at this point.
Representative Mahoney?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Black, does that mean that if I'm a corporation and I, you know, because of my own, you know, inability to write out a check or go online or whatever and give that dollar figure, whatever it is that it is, I lapse and I forget and I continue to forget for 20 or 30 years, and all of a sudden, oh, how dumb of me. Let me pay a $25 fine for the last 20 years and I'll be right back in the swing of things. Is that what you're doing here?
Mr. Black?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney, it's possible, although I think that's that would be an unusual circumstance, since I think the IRS would probably and anybody you're doing a bank closing with who asked for a good standing, the bank would ask for, or the purchaser or seller, if you're involved in a real estate closing, usually they'll ask for what's called a certificate of good standing as part of the transaction, and we would refuse it at that point, and that would notify everybody involved that, oh, by the way, you better reinstate. So I think it's unusual, but yes, it is possible that that could happen. But we do have some protections in the existing law, to the extent that when you reinstate, you can only reinstate to the extent that if your corporate name has been taken by somebody else, you'll have to pick a new name. If you have alienated assets or if liabilities have occurred, the reinstatement is subject to those occurrences that have happened during the gap period between the dissolution and your reinstatement. So there is some protection for people out there who might be impacted by this reinstatement, if that's where you're headed with the question.
Representative Mahoney?
Well, are you asking them to reinstate on a yearly basis, or to notify you they're still in business on a yearly basis, and for that reason paying, you know, a $5 registration fee of some sort? Or otherwise, I don't see any reason to register. I mean, is there what's going on here that you're that they have to
Right. What are they, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney? I think you're asking, what are they reinstating from? There is in the bill and in other sections of law an annual registration requirement for business entities in the state of Minnesota. Generally speaking, if you miss the registration during, and it's calendar year registration, good for the entire calendar year. If you miss the registration for a calendar year, you are generally dissolved, administratively dissolved. And that is what you are reinstating from that administrative dissolution. And so up till now, there's been a year. This year that we're talking about deleting here has been the grace period. And we've limited the grace period to a year. And now what we're doing by deleting the whole, that line, is to say your grace period is unlimited. I might add that nonprofits already have this. We did this about, Mr. Chairman, I think in the 2000 session, we gave nonprofits the right to reinstate at any future time. So,
Mr. Representative Mahoney.
So, if someone doesn't reinstate within the 1 year grace period, you know, and I'm just going to put a dollar figure up there because I don't have any clue what it might be, and it could be any of the entities that we're talking about here. Let's say they reinstate their re-registering fee, their yearly fee was $10, and they've gone 2 or 3 years. Would they have to pay their 3 years of $10 plus the $25 fine?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney, actually at this time there is no annual registration fee at all for limited liability companies, business corporations, nonprofit corporations, nor I think for the co-ops. Although I'd have to check that out. Mr. Pender might be able to help me, but I think 308A.995 is the annual registration for co-ops, and I don't think there's a fee for that either. So there, if you're on time, there isn't any fee right now, Representative.
Representative Mahoney?
Well, it seems, and that's fine. I'm going to understand exactly what you're saying, but, you know, in reality, I mean, you've got nurses, you've got doctors, you've got pipe fitters, you've got plumbers, you've got electricians that have to re-up every year at a substantial number, and if they don't re-up within that calendar year, they have to pay double their license fee, and if they go a year and a day over their license fee, they have to go back and retake the whole test, and I suspect insurance agents and everybody else, real estate, am I right here?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney, as a licensed attorney, I can tell you you're absolutely right. But because I'm subject to the same thing as is Representative Mulvey, Representative Pugh, and any of the other attorneys on the committee, Representative Coles, We have never in Minnesota, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney, we have never had a fee for annual registrations, and so has been our historic position, that the fee is only if you're late.
Well, Mr. Chair, I've always known us pipefitters were discriminated against, and now I'm sure of it. But thank you very much for answering my question.
Representative Clark, then Mallory. Representative Clark.
Chair, I was just noticing the language that said nonprofit corporations, and maybe it applies to others too, when they're registering or re-registering, if it's registering, may only be done online. What's the reason for that? I mean, do we assume that every nonprofit has the ability to go online?
Mr. Black?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, yes, we are, you'll see that in several places throughout the bill, we are moving to an online registration. First of all, let me say that the response to, we have online registration available now.
Mm-hmm.
The online registration for nonprofits, for limited liability companies came effective on January 2nd. We already had business corporations online. In the first 2 months of this year, we received in excess of 45,000 online filings. It takes, I don't know if anyone here has a business or a nonprofit organization. If you visit our website to register, it takes about 30 seconds, literally about 30 seconds. As regard the question of does everyone have access, which I think is where, I'm not sure if that's where you're headed, but the online filing, because it takes such a short time, is something that can be done very conveniently if you go down, for example, to your local library, which has, of course, the libraries have online access to the web. If you have, usually within a nonprofit organization, even though the organization might not have a separate account, usually there is a member of the organization somewhere within the organization who either has access personally or at work or knows someone who can provide that access. Penetration of the market with Internet access in Minnesota is very high. It's not universal, but it's very high, and there are places where you can go. You could also access that at our office or at the I don't know what the availability is in other government offices, but the paper, I have to say that the paper process is just not possible within the budget constraints that we have in the current biennium, and we don't know what the future will hold. It's very, very time-consuming. This way, on our web page, the form comes up. It's the form is pre-filled with the current information. You put in your charter number for your business or nonprofit entity. It comes up. It's pre-filled, and it really takes about 30 seconds.
Or some part.
I'm just wondering. So the past convenience of going to the window here in the state office building will be discontinued, and a person would have to go online somewhere in your office in order to register?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, they could come to the counter and fill it out right at the counter. We have a terminal that is available for the public, and I think that could be done right there.
Representative Clark?
Okay,
computer terminal.
It definitely,
yes, sir.
Definitely, or maybe it could be done right there.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I have another question, and it's not anything in this bill, but since we have somebody from the Secretary of State's office, may I have your permission? I just, looking at the, so, Mr. Black, if you're not the person to answer this, just tell me. But recently I looked at the voter registration forms, the new ones that are out.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me why there is a line that says party preference and then a line that says race, but do not fill it in?
Mr. Black, why did you make the form that way?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, I'm not familiar with the line that says party preference?
And then
are you talking about lines at the bottom?
No. Mr. Chair, I saw some of this caucus time, and there were, and it said, have party preferences, do not fill in. Is this an odd document that didn't come from your office? Maybe that's the case.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I don't think that, I don't have that with me, although I'd be glad to discuss that with you, after. I don't think that's part of our form.
Oh, good. I was wondering, Mr. Chair, if there was something that was being proposed that we didn't know about.
We'll I'll talk to you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Black. Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Mueller.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Bert, I really just got done with this kind of an issue in tax, and we decided there not to. The department came in with the same thing. Well, we want to save money, and it was decided to take out, in their, that case, it was electronic payment. We took that all out because of this same thing. Why are we burdening small people in this state? We've got, as you know, we've got nonprofit corporations for knitting groups or some little knitting circle. And to say that they all can do this is just, it's not true. Probably nobody in their knitting circle can do it. If they're in Hackensack, Minnesota, should they have to come down to your office? It just doesn't seem logical to me. And I just don't think we should be doing this to the citizens of this state, requiring them to get into that.
Representative Mueller, you're referencing a section that Mr. Pender said is just for civil law. No. Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mueller, first of all, the issue, as you'll recall, that we discussed in tax was a payment issue. This has nothing to do with payment. There's no fee associated with it. And in fact, it's probably cheaper for most for most businesses and nonprofits because they don't have to have somebody help them fill out a form. All they have to do is access a web page and click submit. When their information pops up, and if an address is changed, they can put that information in, click submit, and the filing is done. So it ultimately is going to be cheaper for business entities of any sort because they don't need to have somebody help them fill out a form, and they don't need to buy a postage stamp and mail it in.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think for somebody that's not handy with a computer, paying the 37 cents is a lot easier than I don't think that is the discouragement. I think that this stuff about you can file it and anybody can do it just doesn't work, and a lot of people can't do it, and you're going after a lot of little people in the state for no reason, in my opinion. I just think it's totally improper.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mullery, we believe that, I know that I've heard Chief of Staff and former Representative McElroy on a couple of occasions indicate that we are moving towards online as the way to do regulatory business in the state, and we are just a little bit ahead of the curve. I will tell you that we're getting both nonprofit as well as business filings on here at a really high clip. We're getting about 500 a day. And the breakdown is that about 20% of those are nonprofits. So, and of course, there are some, certainly we have sophisticated nonprofits as well as less sophisticated nonprofits. But with that many per day, I think we are getting the kind of penetration into a broad cross-section of folks, whether they're mom and pop businesses or whether they're small nonprofits, they seem to be embracing this.
Jim Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Mr. Black. I don't argue that it's okay if you give them the option to do this. What I'm saying is that it's improper to be saying they're required to do it.
To that point, Representative Linder?
I was just thinking, since so many people are filing electronically, and this is good, and I realize that we should come to that, why don't we just keep it at May, and with the majority of the people doing that because of the convenience and simplicity of doing it, you keep it at May, but then that allows the small organizations to continue to do it longhand if they want to without without being frozen out of the situation, because this really, you know, is a must that they do it.
Representative Mullery, to
well,
that point?
Mr. Chairman, I want to note that I agree with Representative Linder.
Let the record reflect that, please. To that, to the Linder-Mullery points, Mr. Black.
Mr. Chairman and Representatives Linder and Mullery, what we have found is that the presence of the paper system does, the fact that that option is there does lead to people using that and either downloading those forms or requesting those forms from us. And the paper system really is quite quite a lot of work compared to the online. We have not, and again, since we aren't collecting a fee for these filings, those are the kinds of expenses that we are trying to reduce. If we were to keep the paper filing as an option, especially without any fee, I think that would be something that would be a fairly burdensome. And we're trying to, part of the online filing is, of course, in response to the necessary budget cuts of this past biennium. To try and do the paper filing would to a certain extent, be another virtual budget cut.
So, Mullery?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's no different from other. The Department of Revenue wanted to require everybody to do electronic filing, and then they kind of started backing off as we kept criticizing that. And I know, let's see, what was it? I think they did something with nonprofit filers last year. They backed off on that one even. I just think that we should not be going after the small people in the state that aren't trained in the latest equipment.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, just along that line, I presume some of the pressure for savings resulted in coming back on some staff then, is that correct?
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, we lost approximately 24% of our staff, yes.
And Mr. Chair, were these losses at the lower level, or were they at, did we lose any assistant secretaries of state, or were they at the front desk level, I mean the front office level?
Mr. Black?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, I'm not the HR person, but there was a wide range of classes up and down the organization.
Representative Clark?
Mr. Chair, I also want to go on record in supporting Representative Linder's concern here, and I'm wondering if he wants to move it or if one of us should move.
I think we understand the issue, so
if
somebody would like to entertain a motion to make that change, we'll see what the committee thinks. Mr. Pender, where in the bill would we need to amend? If how many musts to mays must we do?
Mr. Chair, I think maybe Mr. Black could help you,
Mr.
answer
Black,
that
where
question.
Where are the musts that Linder, Clark, and Mullery are thinking about supporting going to May?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I hadn't exactly planned on this occurrence, so I don't have that right. Page 32, page...
Well, that is the
Mr. Chair, Representative Black, Mr. Chair, Mr. Black, I think in that line, I guess we would have to take out the only in line 32, page 2, so that it would say may be done online, but I think it probably may be done online anyway.
It is being done online now.
That one's already being done only online?
No, it is already being done online.
Oh.
If you were to take out the only, that leaves an unusual situation that implies that we have to stop doing it now and wait until after December 31st, I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Black, I think maybe on page 2 we should then just delete lines 31 and 32
Mr. Chair, Mr. Pender, I don't think we should, but I guess that may be somebody's motion.
Okay, we'll see what how the amendment would work, and then we'll let you speak.
Very good.
What you want to do on it, and other members, and then I think everybody knows what they want to do on this. So let's see how we would do it if we want to do it.
The next occurrence, I think, Mr. Chairman, would be page 5, lines 10 and 11. Mr. Chair, there again, I think we would just strike that language altogether. Just delete lines 10 and 11 on page 5.
Okay.
And then I think the final occurrence is page 6, lines 11 and 12. Mr. Chair, again, we would just then delete those lines.
Okay.
And when I said that this is that should be done, Representative Coles, I just meant should be done by people who are proposing the amendment, and I wasn't expressing an opinion.
You thought you were kind of going out on a limb there.
Such a controversial
issue. Okay, so Representative Mallory and others move on page 2 to delete lines 31 and 32, page 5, delete lines 10 and 11, page 6, delete lines 11 and 12. To that motion, Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I oppose the motion and would encourage members to oppose it as well. This is a cost-saving measure. Mr. Black has explained that it's already being done in to a large extent, but and he's also explained the system, and there is we're not putting small mom and pops out by doing this. We're simply making we're streamlining government, and streamlining the operations at the Secretary of State's office. I'd encourage members to oppose the motion.
Any comments to the Coles comments,
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Vandeveer, then Wilkin, then Linder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think, though, Representative Mallory, this is somewhat different than the tax issue we have today, because that was discussing the way in which you must pay the tax, and that must be done electronically. I think it's a little bit different filing a report.
Representative Mueller, to that point?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree it's technically different, but it's not different from the things that have come up in the Tax Committee about filing electronically,
which we shot down.
Representative Vandeveer? Okay, I'd like to introduce a group of students from Metro State University. Welcome to the Commerce Committee. Glad you're here. Representative Wilkin and Linder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be quick. I support Representative Cole's desire not to do this. It is extremely easy. I've done it myself. It takes about a minute going online. If it makes the Secretary of State's office more efficient, saves money for the taxpayers, all the better. Let's defeat the motion.
Representative Linder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, Representative Coles, if there's any way we could compromise on this. I agree that it would save money, that it's faster, and most people are doing it now, as you were saying. But the people that aren't computer sophisticated, if they continue to do it longhand or however, why don't we just charge them $5 or $10 or $50, whatever it would cost to handle that, and to some people, they'd probably rather pay it than to worry about going online to do any of this.
Representative Coles?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Lindner, I guess I would I'd certainly be open to continuing to talk about this issue, but I don't know what the appropriate fee would be. I'm not interested in making money for the Secretary of State's office, but if there is going to be additional charges, they need to be able to cover that. And I guess I would need to have some time to talk with Mr. Black and others in the Secretary's office to determine what an appropriate fee would be. At this time, I don't know what it is, and so I'm happy to continue to work with you and others if that's something that you continue to be interested in. But I do think that we want to make sure that we are moving toward this online annual registration process as quickly and efficiently as possible.
Representative Linder? Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a question for probably staff. Does this bill go to any other money committees at all?
It goes to civil law.
That's not a money committee.
State Gov Finance.
Yeah, it will.
We
know that.
Is that on civil law, then state government finance?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, it does end up in a money committee. If it gets out of here.
You got Tuesday night.
Yeah. Okay, with that, we have the amendment before us, the Mullery and other amendment, which deletes on page 2, lines 31 and 32, page 5, deletes lines 10 and 11, deletes lines 11 and 12 on page 6. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Just like last time. Just do the hand thing. Republicans, raise your right hand. No, if you're for the amendment, please raise either hand, but not both. Eight, four. Against? Okay, motion does not prevail, 8 to 12. Okay, with that, Representative Coles renews his motion that House file. Representative Clark.
I just want to provide some information to the committee for the question that I raised, because I did go up to the Secretary of State's office, if I could, just for information. Those voter registration forms that had those spaces on it were not our state forms, so that's why you didn't apparently know about it. However, they are federal forms that can be used in the state of Minnesota and apparently are used, but ours do not have it on it. So it's a relief. I just want to say we do not have those lines on there, which I think would be somewhat confusing to Minnesota voters. So,
Mr. Black, just FYI.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, that would probably be the National Voter Registration Act form.
Yes.
And, of course, that is by state statute, accepted in Minnesota and all other states.
Right.
But, of course, some states have, that's where that line would have come from, because some states do have party registration.
Mr. Chair, they not only have party registration, you have to tell them what race you are.
I think that's for states that are under the Voting Rights Act, because they take statistical evidence in places that have historical discrimination histories in voting rights.
Mm-hmm. Representative Coles renews the motion that House File 1798 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Civil Law. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all favors say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Tuesday, big day, big week next week. So come prepared to discuss some bills. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.